5 hours of local sports talk starts now. This is Idaho Sports Talk, Idaho's longest-running sports talk show. Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
With no two-a-days anymore in college football, basically a week earlier opening camp. Boise State's first practice is tomorrow. Introductory press conferences today. Coach Harsin will be along at 3 o'clock. We'll have one-on-one interviews right here at 2 o'clock with Zach Hill, offensive coordinator, and at 2:30 with defensive coordinator Andy Avalos. Football season, Chris, is here.
Yes, and I'm doing this while looking at a map of the heat index across the country, and I'm like, my goodness, you guys got to be doing it. At least there's no two-a-days anymore. It can at least relieve some of the sweat from
their
brow.
I would hope some teams, if there's one a day, would opt to whatever is a cooler time of day, whether it's morning, you know, go early in the morning or go after the sun starts to set.
I would hope.
I would hope too.
But sometimes coaches are like, this is what builds character, and this is what builds strength. And isn't the motto for Boise State, especially at more emphasized this year, blue collar? And, you know, perhaps building some of that blue collar mentality is being able to survive and thrive in temperatures that might not be adverse. But it's so funny how, like, during the season, we'll have a game or two where we talk about how cold it is, so we'll be longing for temperatures that are closer to this. But it's crazy how you start when it's 105, basically, and by the end of the year, you're trying to keep your fingers and hands preventing them from getting numb.
Now, last year, you and I were at Louisiana for the game. It was hot and humid that day.
Mm-hmm.
This year, Boise State is also going to open in the afternoon, this time at home, 145. But 145 on September 2nd, liable to be pretty warm on the blue.
Yeah, so it's an advantage if you're used to it. And that was the talk going into that September game last year against Louisiana. It was, all right, how are you going to deal with the humidity? Because it's not only hot, but it's humid. And I don't know about you, but I think they handled it okay.
Mm-hmm. It's one of their easier wins of the year.
But you only have to play a half. You don't really have to worry about being worn down by the heat. If you do so well the first and second quarter, forget about the third and fourth. They weren't really needed. So I guess that's a good thing. You don't have to deal with the heat as much during the season if you're so good that the second halves don't even matter.
But usually they don't have too many opportunities to do that. I think Troy is going to be a little stronger opponent in the opener than Louisiana was last year, even though they're from the same league.
Yeah, and they're probably conditioned, too, to deal with whatever temperatures. Now, they don't have the altitude that you kind of have up here. So that's the other side of the coin. Well, you can deal with the humidity, but can you handle the altitude? And correct me if I'm wrong, we never really find concrete answers to those questions.
No.
Right?
We
never have really found the true answer to the altitude question. We've never really found the true answer to heat versus
humidity.
Cold. Yeah, we don't. It's just something we talk about before the game, and once the game happens, we just analyze the game itself.
And we probably will do the same thing again this year.
Yep.
Okay, Coach Harsin's going to speak at 3. Is there a position group? If you said he's probably going to talk about each position group, he's either going to run through them or they're going to ask him about them. Is there one position group, Chris, that you most likely want to hear him talk about?
Yeah, and I thought it would be fun to kind of phrase it. Coach Harsin has to say, we update you on blank position. Which one of those positions would make your ears perk the most? And I want to also throw that one out to you guys out there listening at 208-424-9300. That's the number on the Commercial Tire text line, because we will hear updates on quite a bit of different positions throughout this little period of camp where we're just getting the limited access that we're able to get. But I still think the wide receiver position is the one that will make my ears perk, will make me, if I see that headline on Twitter, I will more likely click that article than one that has any other position. Wide receivers jump to the top of the list. Why? Well, because of the lack of established players there who we think will be in roles where they will have to establish themselves during the season, right? We know Cedric Wilson at the top of the depth chart, and he should have been all-conference, but I guess we won't revisit the thing from last week when he should have been all-conference first team. But outside of that, we got the depth chart. A.J. Richardson, Sean Monster, Killian Butler, Austin Cottrell, Brian Jefferson, they're all on it. Bob, you know more about those guys than anybody else does.
No freshmen are on the list.
Yeah,
now, whether
true.
He'll talk about any of those guys today, but I had receiver as my top position that I find that I have the most question marks coming into the season. I mean, we should have some questions in the offensive line. Three starters are gone. We should have some questions on defense where there's a lot of fresh faces, but maybe it's because these are people that are going to touch the ball. They're going to catch the ball from Brett Rypien. There is only one person back that you know what you're going to get out of in the wide receiver spot, that being Cedric Wilson. I, too, had that as the position. I'm interested in anything he'd have to say. You know, at this time of the year, he probably can't say too much about, you know, so-and-so's looking really good running routes, so-and-so needs more work on blocking, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that that's the position to me that has the most question marks, that if I could listen to one, or you say, which one is going to get your antenna to perk up, to me, it's wide receiver.
And not only that, it's the easily observable position, right? Because while we think we understand football at least a little bit, to really get an idea of which of the offensive linemen are really tearing it up in camp, I guess you can see, well, if he's just destroying guys on the other side, but a lot of it is nuance and you would need a coach's perspective. And I would be interested to, you know, see the quotes from the coaches, but that's not the most easily observable position or any of the, you know, interior or exterior line positions. Receivers, you could be able to, as a casual observer, well, this dude dropped three passes. That's not good.
This guy got open and caught a couple exactly. And ran past somebody.
This dude jumped over a defensive back and made like an over-the-shoulder catch. And those are all things that you don't need to be the biggest expert and know nuanced things about the game to be able to have, hey, he's doing well. Hey, he's not doing well. So that's why, to me, receivers are the ones that will jump. And it's not just with any team. It's with this one specifically because there's so much to be learned from the guys who are involved in the mix. But you add in the how you observe the position to who are the guys we know and don't know. I think that's why the match is made for, all right, I'm going to read every update that we get on the receivers for the next couple weeks.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris, we're here today until 3. Then it'll be the Coach Harsin press conference and bringing you home with analysis and dissecting what he said. It'll be Caves and Prater. They'll get started whenever Coach Harsin's finished. My guess, probably somewhere between 3:20 and 3:30 after the press conference. We've got coming up live at 2, Zach Hill, offensive coordinator, and Andy Avalos, defensive coordinator, at 2:30. Then tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, we're going to get a guest every day coming off the practice field. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, very early in the show, you'll hear from somebody as how the practice went that day. So keep it tuned. We've got everything going for you right here on Boise State Football on your FM home for Boise State.
Sounds like a busy week. With that in mind, like we talked about a position group that we both agreed it was receivers. But let's say I throw out a scenario that is completely unrealistic, but Coach Harsin will give you a detailed report of one player, only one player's daily progress in camp. Every day, detailed report of just this one player. Again, it would never happen because coaches like to keep things reserved. But what player would you pick? If you got to pick the player on the one guy you could get daily progress reports on how they're doing in camp, detailed coaches' insights, who would be the player you'd pick?
I picked Jabril Frazier.
Okay.
Defensive end, stud position. Last year, he battled through a plethora of injuries, shoulder, knee, ankle, had surgeries on them all. 4 sacks, first 5 games, didn't have any after that. He's joining Sam Whitney this year at the stud. I think he's a guy that can be a difference maker. I want to know that he's healthy. I want to know what he's doing. I thought Boise State was hurt. We talked with David Moa last week about not being able to rotate as many people in at the defensive line spot to get after the quarterback. I would want to know how Jabril is doing because I think he will be a dynamic player for this Boise State defensive line if he's healthy.
So a health thing. You want to be able to make sure
what he's able to do. Yeah.
See if he's back to full strength. That's a good pick. For me, you can call me crazy if you think that this pick is crazy. Jabril Frazier is a really good pick. I probably would be in the top 5 if I made a list like that. I said Joel Velasquez.
Okay.
Because I need to know if the kicker's good or not. Like, we don't know. You know, he's coming in and he's doing both roles as a kicker and a punter. It's been a while since somebody's had to do both
roles. Kyle Brotchman did both.
Yes. Now, you're coming off of a couple of seasons where you've had really good players playing in both roles, whether it's Rasa or Sean Whale. You were getting quality special teams from your punter and kicker. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to be one dude doing both and a guy who hasn't done it at this level before. I was looking at the high school stats. I think the most recent year was like 6 for 9 on field goal attempts, which isn't much, but he was like darn near perfect on extra points. If I would want to know if he's good, because that affects like how I'm going to think about Boise State's prospects for this season. Because if you're in a spot where you're struggling at both kicker and punter, and it's the same guy, that's going to affect you multiple games probably during the season.
Well, think about it. Kickoffs. Where the other team starts their drive. You know, is he kicking for touchbacks and giving them the ball at the 20? Is he, you know, hanging him up so Boise State can pin him inside the 20? Punts, is he able to flip the field position?
Mm-hmm.
Is he able to get high hang time where they have to fair catch it and they're not getting a return? And then, like you said, you don't want to throw away extra points, and you'd like to be able, more so the year before in 15, Tyler Rossa was a weapon. Now, part of it was because Boise State really bogged down in the red zone, mm-hmm. and they had to take some threes. But both were solid. You really didn't worry about either one. I know Rossa's senior year wasn't as good as his junior year, but you were in the upper echelon in field goal kicking in your in the league last year, and I thought Whale was as good as any punter. I wouldn't have traded him for any punter.
Yeah, we talk about in the Mountain West, and one of the themes you just got back from Media Day is how like thin the margins are now, right? Mm-hmm. Like how close these teams are to each other, and how like, once that you look at turnovers, how that affects so much, and Boise State is trying to flip that back to a positive for them. But like when the margins are this thin and whether you win the conference or not comes down to one game and these teams are close, if you don't have a reliable kicker or a reliable punter, that hurts you significantly. And at least since you know, the few years that I've been here, it's been something where you can almost write Boise State will be strong in those categories. I don't know how it will be. I will say the slim sample size we got was a poorly conditioned spring game where it was really not friendly for a kicker, but it wasn't exactly a pretty picture. So if I can get one player or get a detailed progress report every day, how are they doing? I would pick the kicker. Now, do you call me crazy or no?
No.
Yes!
No.
I
think the fact that he's done nothing really in the public view. He could be all conference in both categories.
Absolutely.
He could be terrible. But you're right. We have no way to judge that because I agree with you. Based on the conditions of last year's spring game in March or April, I mean, I think you have to just say it's a non-factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know. Exclusive Boise State football training camp coverage is right here on your FM home of Boise State football. You can download the Ticket app for interviews, opinions, and the latest camp news on Bronco football. And tune in to me, to Chris, to Caves, to Prater during Idaho Sports Talk weekdays from 1 to 6. When news happens with Bronco football, it's always on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket. News today, 2 o'clock, Zach Hill, 2:30, Andy Avalos, and 3 o'clock, Brian Harsin. What's the one thing baseball does better than the other three professional team sports? That's happening today, and that's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Chris, Sports Radio, The Ticket. Boise State football opening camp, first practice tomorrow. Loads of press conferences today. We'll have offensive coordinator Zach Hill at 2, Andy Avalos, the defensive coordinator, 2:30, and then starting off Caves and Prater, you'll hear the press conference from Brian Harsin at 3. July 31st, at least recently, has been the deadline for not having to get waivers on anybody in the trade. And, Chris, I think of the deadline trades. They do have a deadline period for both hockey, basketball, actually, and football. Baseball, I think, is the wildest because you don't need to match up salaries. You don't need to worry about, you know, am I getting fair value, not getting fair value. You could trade anybody that's not under a no-trade clause for just about anything. Sometimes you'll get a veteran. Sometimes you'll get prospects. One of the biggest chips, the Yankees, I had down needing a starting pitcher. They get the A's, Sonny Gray, for 3 prospects. The A's originally wanted Frazier, the outfielder the Yankees got from Cleveland last year. They also wanted to get Torres, the shortstop that the Yankees got from the Cubs. The Yankees held fast, said no. Frazier's already in the big leagues. Torres is hurt, but he'll be headed there soon. They really like him. A's get 3 prospects. 2 of them, Chris, are hurt. For a while, Fowler was the outfielder that got hurt in that game at the White Sox when he ran into that box on the down the right field line. And then Caprillion, I'm guessing I'm pronouncing it right, Tommy John surgery. I got to question any team that's trading for 2 people that are hurt like that.
It's discount shopping. Sometimes you get the best value when you discount shop. Their price is a little bit lower, and you can maybe acquire them for giving up less than you would if they were healthy. So maybe that's what they're doing there, although I don't know anything about these prospects, which kind of makes what you said, like the baseball trade deadline being the best. that's where I kind of hesitate, because ain't nobody know anything about these prospects. You might as well just call them draft picks. Mm-hmm. They're draft picks, right? They have future. You can't really get much value out of them now, and they can hopefully help you down the line. They're draft picks. So all these big names, and I quote, put big names in quotes, because that's the other thing that hurts, is that, like, how many big guys are there just in baseball, period, that are on the trade block? Because there's a very few just marquee names in baseball now anyway. We went through the All-Star game lineup, mm-hmm. and how we're like, man, 1996, it seemed like there were a lot more big-time, like, household names in baseball than there are in 2017. So you have the limited household names that there are, and very few of those household names are actually on the trade block. So how great of a trade deadline, more in terms of excitement, can it be if, all right, there's not many big names, and the names that are being dealt for, quote-unquote, draft picks, mm-hmm. guys who can't help you right now. So that would be the counter I would have as for what is hurts it from an excitement standpoint.
I don't think the Cubs win their World Series last year without the Aroldis Chapman deal.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that Andrew Miller, if he doesn't go to Cleveland, that they're in the American League champion and plays the Cubs for the World Series. So I think these are the days today where if Washington goes out and get a closer, maybe they go on and win the National League. Maybe the Dodgers need one more starter. I mean, the Dodgers are going for a record-setting year, but you know what? If they lose in the first round to, say, Colorado, Arizona, this season's a bust.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not important. I understand its importance. I know, and the thing about baseball, and I would trade, there'd be a lot more trades if I was in charge of all these teams, because if you're a bottom 15 team in baseball, what do you have a closer for? You don't need a closer. You're not winning enough games for it to matter whether you have a closer. So if I were in charge of it, especially with bullpen pieces, there would be movement all across the board. So I understand the importance of the, I was just trying to evaluate it from the excitement angle. And to me, what makes for an exciting transaction period are the names involved. And if they aren't exactly the most household names in your game, then how exciting is this period?
Kevin joins us here on Idaho Sports Talk, joining us at 424-9300. Kevin, welcome. Bob and Chris here.
Thank you, Bob and Chris. It is a pleasure. I must say, now that I'm back in my car, the angina pectoris has calmed. The hair on the back of my neck is laid down again. But when you first said at the show's opening that football season is here, I nearly drove off the road. And thank you for not hijacking the show, spoken like a true Giants fan, because looking at the National League West standings from the bottom up, I can see why you'd want football season to get here soon. But thank you for bringing the conversation back to the trades and stuff. Very, very alarming column in this morning's Statesman about these other teams in the National League that are gearing up to play my Dodgers. I mean, please, it's been since 1988. I was a young man. I was like a kid, and I haven't celebrated since. Here's what the Dodgers need to do. If, you know, I don't think they need to do anything, but they appear to have depth. Chase Utley as a pinch hitter, and he can play lots of positions. The guy that I don't mind seeing go is Adrian Gonzalez, because when they were paying this guy, you know, the moon, the stars, and clovers, he was doing absolutely nothing. Now that we've come along with some young talent, beginning with Yasiel Puig and Peterson and Bellinger and Seager, you know, we don't need that guy. Ship him out to pasture, get rid of him, and let's go with this youth movement, because we're only three World Series away from being up with you, Bob. Now, Chris Lewis, I got to ask you,
All right, what's up?
I don't want to make any assumptions, because, you know, we peel the onion layers back here on this show. We get to the core of the matter. Nothing's off limits. If you had, and I know you're from Philly and all, if you had your choice of championships and your team would win the championships, correct me if I'm wrong, if your top five would be, say, a Syracuse National Championship in football, Orange National Championship in basketball, followed by a Phillies World Series, followed by a Sixers NBA title, followed by a Eagles Super Bowl, followed by a Flyers hockey. What is your personal pecking order for those of us out here that are going to be wishing and hoping for you?
Well, thanks for the call, Kevin.
Appreciate it. I'll run through that. Phillies have actually won a World Series. That's like the only team I've rooted for who actually have won a World Series.
I know the two for the Philadelphia to be at the bottom of the list, and yeah. I'm not sure who'd be ahead of the other one.
Eagles and the Flyers. I'd be indifferent from the Flyers standpoint, and I'd almost be, you know, the Eagles fans are just a whole nother level of craziness, so they might be even below Flyers. But for me, it's no doubt the Phillies and Sixers at the top, whatever order you want to put it in. Sixers, it's just been a while since we've seen them have that kind of success, so I'd probably put them one because of the drought that they've had compared to the Phillies. They've given me what I wanted in 2008, getting a championship there. But yeah, Syracuse would fall below the two hometown because, again, I was a Philly fan before I even knew Syracuse ever existed.
Well, and you've seen a hoop championship.
Yeah, 2003, though. I wasn't rooting for him then.
Oh, you weren't.
Yeah, that was well before I went to school. I wasn't looking at colleges back in 2003.
So it wasn't as
12
exciting.
Years old.
It wasn't as
Jerry
exciting.
Jerry McNamara, Carmelo Anthony? Nah, man. I was 12 years old. I was probably rooting for UConn. Whatever they were doing. So, yeah, Syracuse is an adopted team. Philly was born. So that's the pecking order. Unfortunately, they are not a factor, the Phillies, in the trade deadline. So that's all you. And by the way, the Giants being that far back behind the Dodgers is just incredible.
It is.
33.5 games going
But
in
you know what? Like I said Friday when you weren't here, if you lose the wild card by one game, you're getting the same prize as if you finish 50 games out.
33.5, though, man. That's nuts. Now, on that note, he brought up the Dodgers, and while we're talking trade deadline, from what I heard, that Darvish to Los Angeles thing is falling apart, right? It doesn't seem as likely. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're supposed to be the baseball guy. The Dodgers have all these wins. I still think the Nationals are better set up for what's a playoff series.
I would agree.
Which
Except
is
for a closer.
Thing. Yeah.
I want a closer if I'm the Nationals.
So who are they going to find? They already have a couple of trades for some bullpen help. But
they have. Doolittle's closing right now. I think I want Britton from Baltimore, but I don't think Baltimore's going to trade him to Washington.
Because?
Because the owners have a feud with each other.
That's stupid. That right there is dumb. Can they help? Will it help Baltimore? I don't know how much Britton still has left on his contract.
Well, Britton doesn't get used in postseason. Remember that.
No, yeah, because it's like a one-and-done situation, and we're like, nah, man, just people there. We'll use him in the 11th inning that never comes up.
Right.
What was that about? Come on,
Showalter. I think Britton would be very valuable for the Nationals to pick up, much like your thought on if you're out of the race, try to market your closer, send your closer. I think Washington, although I will say this, having watched a lot of Giants games, I question Baker in the dugout for Washington.
Okay, so you have a bias against Dusty Baker. I understand it, but my whole thing, I want to go back to this feud that you speak of. So this feud is supposed to prevent my team from being in a better position. If you can get three good prospects for a closer that you don't need because you're not in a race, I'm not going to get these three prospects because I have a feud?
Because they don't want the other team to win.
Your job is to make your team better.
I know, but I don't think they want to see the people down the Beltway win.
That is a level of pettiness that is completely unnecessary, and if I'm a fan of one of those teams, I want the owner to settle this beef.
So
what do we need to do?
The Yankees have done by far the most of the trade deadline this year, and I thought maybe they would just be young trying to do the best they could. They see this thing as wide open in the American League.
Is that smart for them?
Yeah, I think so.
If they're building for the future, why would you sacrifice some of the future? Because, I mean, you're a young team, so you're supposed to be a contender for a while, so why would you limit your window?
But you're not trading your best prospects.
Okay. So if you're just
trading
trash,
two that are injured.
If you're trading trash, then yeah, go for it.
So they get Sonny
never
Gray.
Never have a problem trading trash.
It looks like Darvish not going to go. They have 30 minutes, basically, left to make a trade.
But yet it'll be reported at like 2:30. It trickles
probably out by the time everything gets official, the I's get dotted, the T's get crossed. Again, coming up today at 2, we've got offensive coordinator Zach Hill. 2:30, it's defensive coordinator Andy Avalos. And then at 3, head coach Brian Harsin. Sports update, a little more than just trades going on right now. Fish?
Yeah, the Baltimore Ravens have signed yet another quarterback not named Colin Kaepernick, plus a couple of bad news for Broncos in the NFL and training camp. That's coming up next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
It's sponsored by Idaho Foot and Ankle Associates in Boise, Meridian, and Nampa. They measure success one foot at a time. Start the sports update with some Olympic news. I believe that Los Angeles has reached a deal with the Olympic Committee to be the host city for the 2028 Summer Games as opposed to the 2024 Games. The deal came after in June when the International Olympic Committee announced that they would reward both the 2024 and 2028 games if Los Angeles and Paris could come to an agreement on who would host which one. There's a news conference scheduled today at the Staples Center at 6 p.m. Mountain Time when it's expected that the news will be made official and the games will be awarded in September.
Both Paris and L.A. put on strong bids for the 24 games, and I think they looked at what both cities had and felt that they were great choices, so I think they decided to go ahead and give two. Now, I was wondering why Paris really wanted 24, and then I went back, looked at the history. It will be the 100th anniversary of the Paris Games in 24, so I think that's why they especially wanted the 24, and L.A. probably really didn't care whether they had 24 or 28.
Well, I mean, if it wasn't official before, it's official now that Los Angeles is the United States' big event city. It really is. You take a look at what they have coming up with the docket. They have the Super Bowl coming up in 2022, have a Final Four in 2024. They have a World Cup in 2026. Of course, now the Olympics in 2028. In that span, they'll also have a college football national championship game, and they'll have an NBA All-Star game just to throw into the mix. So they have a little bit of everything coming their way in the next decade.
And how many of those events are going to be played at the new Kroenke Stadium that the Rams have?
Super Bowl will be, Final Four will be. I don't know if the World Cup and the Olympics, I'm sure they'll have something in that spot.
The
championship game, will that be there?
Yeah.
Or is that the Rose Bowl? I don't know what
they're
doing.
Well, okay. Maybe not. Good point. Could be the Rose Bowl.
Well, some bad news for a couple of Boise State players of the NFL. One of them formerly of the NFL, at least for now. Thomas Spurbeck has been cut by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after the third day of training camp. Meanwhile, Jay Ajayi is currently being evaluated for concussion, was unable to finish Dolphins training camp today. That is according to the Dolphins head coach, Adam Gase. They're expected to announce the official extent of Ajayi's injury later today.
You hear that sound? That's him sliding down draft boards in fantasy football. Do you want to draft a running back that's already had a concussion?
No.
I mean, like, I hope he gets back, and I hope he doesn't even have a concussion. Again, he's just being evaluated for one, but I don't want to draft a running back in fantasy football that's had a concussion in training camp. That would make me very, very nervous.
I think that probably, if teams had to list who had concussions or go through concussion protocol, and they may have to do that now, I think that list is going to be long this summer.
So a lot of running backs are going to have concussions?
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of players, period. I think it's much more common than people think.
Can you tell me which one of those will get concussions so I can avoid them in my fantasy football league, please?
Just figure everybody will. Unfortunately.
Well, speaking of a lot of players, the Baltimore Ravens have a lot of quarterbacks, so they've signed another one, not named Colin Kaepernick again. The Ravens have already cut former Arena League quarterback David Olsen just 3 days after he was signed with the team, and they have signed former Liberty quarterback Josh Woodrum. The team said this move, again, has no impact on their decision about signing Kaepernick and Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti. So the team is still considering Kaepernick and asked fans to, quote, pray for us.
Well, I think there are two separate things. I think that the quarterbacks that have been signed, they're looking for people to throw practice passes. But what would make Olsen's passes not worth keeping and bringing in this guy from Liberty? That is beside me. You're in trouble if you think either of these guys is going to play for you in the regular season. You might as well say, you know what? We're going to compete with the Jets at the bottom of the standings if you have a situation where you're going with either of these quarterbacks.
Now, David Olsen was the guy who, when did they sign him?
Friday.
And when did they cut him?
Monday.
Now, was his tenure longer or shorter than the Trump new communication director who they let go?
Slightly shorter, but they definitely shorter? Competition, yeah.
Okay, I wanted to see who had the job the longest. Man, the jobs actually were quicker than a Kardashian wedding. Kardashian marriage, they don't last very long either.
Well, speaking of not lasting long, that's exactly what happened with Brandon Albert and his tenure with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Albert asked to be released after the Dolphins didn't want to re-up his contract, so he was traded to the Jaguars for a 7th-round pick earlier this offseason. He missed offseason conditioning and minicamps in hopes of securing a new contract. The Jags said that they wouldn't rework his deal, so Brandon Albert, before even playing one down for his new team, has announced his retirement from the NFL.
I don't think the Dolphins are going to give him their 7th-round pick back either.
No.
That's funny, man. NFL, you can never be so sure about your roster construction. I guess it's, in a way, like what college basketball and football coaches have to deal with these transfers, right? You never know when a transfer is going to come and screw up your depth chart, screw up what you have your rotation for next year. You never know when a retirement's going to happen in the NFL to really throw off your plans for the upcoming season. So NFL coaches should speak to these college coaches and figure out how they deal with it.
What do you think the Jags thought they were getting? I mean, you only gave him a seventh-round pick, so you couldn't be thinking you were getting a whole lot, could you?
He was probably going to be their starting left tackle, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of like the weird, it was sort of a trade for Julius Thomas, but then they didn't trade, and they both traded him separate seventh-round picks.
Okay.
So it was really kind of strange. So basically, he was traded for Julian Thomas, who did nothing for Jacksonville, so I guess they got a little bit.
Yeah,
but it was really weird. His tenure with Jacksonville started out very strangely.
So his just filed this into the same category as wasn't on the job for very long.
Yeah. Now the MLB trade deadline is today, and this actually just came across about 53 seconds ago, according to Ken Rosenthal on Twitter. Pirates have traded Tony Watson to the LA Dodgers pending a medical physical.
Left-handed setup, man. Somebody that will probably help him, but it's not a very sexy trade.
I'm assuming that probably takes him off the Britain market. Or you think they're still going to go after Britain?
I think that was plan B. I think that they probably tried to get Britain and decided that what the Orioles wanted for Britain was too rich for their blood, and they decided to go with plan B, which is Tony Watson.
I want to know more about these sexy trades. So what's the definition of a sexy trade if this isn't a very sexy
Zach
trade?
Zach Britton is a sexy trade.
All right, that's a sexy trade?
Yu Darvish would be a sexy trade.
Okay, what if it's Chris Benson going and Anna Benson is going too? Is that a sexy trade or no?
Could be, or also could be a headache too. And again, just because the trade deadline comes up today, you can still make trades, but they have to go through waivers. And we'll probably get into that at some point. It's kind of technical. But one of the guys that went through waivers after the trade deadline was one Cody Ross.
Oh, there you go. How about
who hit a couple of bombs against the Phillies.
Would Justin Verlander be a sexy trade?
Yes, he would be a sexy trade.
And Kate Upton gets traded in that too. So that's another, that's a both ways sexy trade.
Well, sticking with baseball, Adrian Beltre became the 31st member of the MLB 3,000 hit club with a double in the fourth inning yesterday against the Orioles. Now the watch goes to Albert Pujols, currently sitting at 2,914 hits.
He'll get there. Won't be as fast as a pace as he had hit him earlier in his career, but he'll get there eventually. Looking at Beltre's numbers for 20 years, the thing that impresses me the most, he's played for multiple teams. How consistent he is. I don't know that I'd ever say he was one of the greatest players in any year that he played, but every year he's amongst the very good. He'll probably get into the Hall of Fame, and I guess my question is, because he played well for a lot of different teams, what cap does he choose on his plaque if he gets in?
Can go with what? Dodgers, Mariners, or Rangers?
Red Sox?
He only played one season with the Red Sox.
Okay, probably scratch them then.
He finished ninth in MVP voting, though, that year. You would probably... That's a tough base. I don't like that. I don't like that tradition in baseball. Why do you need to pick one?
Well, Catfish Hunter went blank because he said he played for two teams, the A's and Yankees, and when you looked at his accomplishments for both teams, it was about a 50-50, and he ended up putting nothing on the front of his hat.
I mean, this dude, he was second in MVP voting in 2004, and he was seventh in MVP voting in 2016. I mean, that's kind of interesting that you could go that well apart while still being considered a top 10 player in baseball. I didn't really ever, in my mind, consider Beltre like a top 20 guy in baseball, but that was just, I guess, me not paying attention as much with him having a lot of American League years after he left the Dodgers, with me being a fan of the Phillies and focusing in more on the National League. But, you know, one year he hit 48 home runs, but he does have a strange power surge at the age of 31, where he had 28, then 32, then 36, then 30. Before that, he hadn't hit 30 home runs since his 48 that he hit in 2004, and he hadn't had 30 around that year. So it's a weird home run. If you actually look at the baseball card, it's a strange career.
Weren't those years he was playing in Seattle, though?
Yeah.
And Seattle was known for killing home runs back then.
Fair.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Rangers, Bob. I remember more
I think
as a
you're
Ranger
probably
than
right,
a Dodger.
And especially if you would retire with them.
Yeah.
They you know, give him a lot of money in the back end of his career. I would think that guy next year that I think is going to be the lock for Hall of Fame is Chipper Jones. Jim Thome is a probable, and there's a lot of other ones that are maybe they're hoping.
And we'll end the sports update with news about one of Chris's favorite players who refuses to play basketball anymore, Allen Iverson, part of the Big Three League. He's a player manager. First, he didn't want to play, and over the weekend, he was a no-show for the game in Dallas. absence not expected by the league. The league said in an official statement, quote, "We had no advance warning. We don't have any information at all to the circumstances surrounding his absence, and they are launching an investigation."
You don't really need to launch an investigation.
Been launched.
Just go to the local casino, and he was probably there, and then can find out everything you need to know. This is all investigation needed. It's not hard. It's Allen Iverson. It's probably either at a TGI Fridays or a casino.
Well, you brought up the thing. Which would be more interesting to watch, the big three or the one with the former college players? Yeah. I think this kind of thing tips it for the whatever the former college. What's that one, the throwback league or something?
It's TBT, as in, like, you think throwback Thursday, but it's the basketball tournament. It's also the same hashtag as throwback Thursday.
So. And it's all throwback people from college.
That's true.
I think it's more entertaining than the big three.
Yeah, I mean, the big three, after you've seen them play once, it's like, okay, why do I need to keep seeing them?
Do you really want to go to an old-timers game?
Yeah.
It's basically what you're asking.
I mean, it's not like you're getting high-quality basketball. At least in the basketball tournament, there is a prize that means something for them, so you could actually see them, you know, striving for that millions of dollars.
Now, I watched a game the other day. Didn't know anybody that was in the game. The team was basically, I think they were called the Purple and Blacks. They were Kansas State alums, except one guy who had played at Missouri, and they mentioned the fact that he could only get a half share, but all the guys that are from Canton, so they must have picked him up somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was funny that everybody else was in for a full share, but he was in for a half share.
They needed a ringer, so they brought him aboard.
The country concert event of the summer is coming up to the Ford Idaho Center on Friday night. Country superstar Jake Owen will headline, a group that includes Neil McCoy, Cassidy Pope, who you've seen on The Voice, and Drake White. You can get your tickets now at Jackson's Food Stores and ictickets.com. Quick Hits coming up next, where Chris and I will tackle four topics in rapid-fire fashion. Chris will talk about what is the latest delusional comment from Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, and I'm going to talk about why I thought I was watching the movie Groundhog Day last night. That's coming up next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Chris, what's the latest delusional thing that Roger Goodell said?
I don't think any team tanks. He said that.
Goodell's in his league.
Yes, in his team, in his league. He said that at a fan forum at the Jets facility. The Jets have gotten rid of basically every veteran that they had on their team and will probably keep a record amount of young players, sort of like what the Cleveland Browns did last year, where they got rid of every veteran they basically had and had a record amount of draft picks, like whether it was guys they drafted or undrafted guys. They kept a record amount of guys with 0 years of experience in the NFL. It's not because they're trying to maximize the number of wins that they can have this year. That's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because it's a way to rebuild. You're seeing how these young guys will pan out, who you have on cheap contracts, and you're going to probably maximize the draft pick that you'll get the next season, and you'll probably finish in the top five. It happens in the NFL, happens in all the other sports too. It happened when Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin were the quarterbacks. I remember when the Colts, Peyton Manning was hurt, so that was one thing, but they also did everything that they could do to lose every game the rest of that season and ensure they'd get the number one pick and be able to draft Andrew Luck for the next generation. You take a look at Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen. We did a series on this show profiling some of the high-profile quarterbacks that will be in this upcoming NFL draft. It would be smart for the Jets to do what they can to put themselves in a spot where they can grab one of these guys. So if it's this year, having a team that has a lot of young players going through a quote-unquote transition might be code for we're not, as an organization, trying to maximize the amount of wins we can get this year.
One other thing that you did not mention, but I'm sure you probably, well, I'm not sure you'll agree. I think you'll agree. These veterans are not getting you to the playoffs. Would you agree with that? That you are releasing?
No,
they're not. They maybe will do better than the rookies.
No.
But the other thing is, you can see of these younger guys you have, who's going to be a part of the solution in the future and which guys won't. Where if you keep these veterans that are not going to be part of the solution in the future, you stifle the development of some of the younger guys. Sometimes you got to take two steps back to go one step forward.
Exactly. I mean, I think fans generally understand this, but some of them don't. A team's goal is not to win the maximum amount of games that their roster could possibly win each year. Like, sometimes it just makes sense to take those couple of steps back, whether it's to clear the books or to see what the young guys have, because for the long-term success, what can maximize your ceiling down the line, sometimes it means having fewer wins in one given year.
Topic number two.
What is college basketball in the East doing that makes a lot of sense?
Well, they're trying to develop younger referees. They also want to make officiating more consistent from one league to the next. And they want to make travel easier and less disjointed. I applaud them. There'll be a joint officiating alliance led by the ACC that will also include the Big East, the Atlantic 10, the Colonial, the Ivy, the Patriot, the Big South, and the Northeast. Now, my question is, how are the officials going to react to this? There are some officiating hogs out there.
Hogs.
That referee the big games in the ACC and the Big East. Mm-hmm. The leagues do not pay the same amount of money. I guarantee you the Big East pays more than the Patriot League. But if the idea is to develop some younger guys, give some younger guys some prime matchups in the Big East and the ACC, and have some of the older officials referee games in the Patriot League, the Ivy League, and the Big South, I don't know how it's going to go over. But I like the idea. They need to get younger blood into officiating, and I think the officials, if they're able to make this work, officiating will be better for it.
Yeah, I agree generally with that premise of, all right, try to get as many the experience of the big games as possible. Now, should the person in charge of deploying the officials be LeVar Ball? LeVar Ball seems to have a great relationship with every official that he comes across in the AAU circuit, so maybe he's the guy needed. Psych.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, what sporting event did you watch over the weekend?
I didn't pay for it, but I was at the house of somebody who did pay for UFC 214. Cormier versus John Bones Jones, their second fight, and I think this was John Bones Jones' first fight since he got out of jail with his drug charges and DUI that he had, and Bones ended up knocking out Daniel Cormier in what I thought was a pretty entertaining fight. I saw also a couple of the, I guess, I don't think they call it undercards there because they're all some, they don't want to like undersell some of the other fighters that they have on a card, but I was entertained because it felt like more shorter and more compact than a boxing fight. Like, it wasn't as many rounds. It seemed like it went by faster. There was a lot of action. It wasn't like a Floyd Mayweather one punch and then back off, punch and then back off. Although John Bones Jones was booed by the crowd because they didn't think he fought as entertaining of a style as Cormier. But I will say, positive night for the UFC if it got somebody like me to be like, hey, this is pretty cool. I'm not somebody who usually goes out of their way to watch or purchase, but I was entertained for a night watching.
Would you have been entertained at $10?
Yeah, you know what?
20?
I'm going to pay 10. Probably not getting much more than 20.
Because I remember going over to your house, and I hold you not responsible, but I chipped in on that Mayweather-Pacquiao thing, and I didn't think we got our money's worth.
Yeah, I felt like you're more likely to get your money's worth paying for a UFC fight than a boxing fight. I mean, there can be a great boxing fight, and don't want to just completely rip on it, but I feel like you're almost guaranteed to get more action with UFC. Now, some people would say, okay, the action, is that crossing the line of too violent or not? But again, for one Saturday night, I thought it was fine.
Topic number four.
All right, so we went through my weekend of sports. Why did you think you were watching the movie Groundhog Day last night watching sports?
Sunday Night Baseball. You alluded to the Giants being 30-plus games out. They are now 34.5 games behind the Dodgers. That's the worst they've ever been behind the Dodgers, or anybody, since the end of the 1946 season. And we still have, not quite half, probably 40% of the season to go. But it was just the game in a nutshell. Madison Bumgarner is back. I was smiling when he was on the mound. 5 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, and 7 innings. He leaves with a 1-0 lead. Bullpen spits up the 1 run in the 9th inning. Dodgers tie it. And if you're a Dodger fan, you've seen this movie before as well, but you smile at the end. Then the Giants work hard to score their run in the 11th. They do it with a single, a stolen base, and a single, and they blow it in the 11th. Kyle Farmer, who you have a little history with,
yeah.
Major league debut, knocks in two with a double in the right field corner. First time he'd ever batted. I thought it summed up both team seasons in a nutshell.
Really happy for Kyle Farmer, who I was the broadcaster for his Born Braves team a few years ago. I guess that was 2010, so it was a while ago, and followed him through the Dodgers organization. In fact, Ogden is one of their affiliates. I was with Idaho Falls, saw him there. We've kind of, you know, kept in touch via social media. So it was kind of cool to see him in his, you know, first hit be able to deliver a winner like that.
I didn't like
against
it. Even though he went to school at Georgia. Up next, offensive coordinator Zach Hill. We'll find out what's going to happen on that side of the ball coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Bronco practice starts tomorrow. Today, all the assistant coaches meeting the media, as well as Coach Harsin's press conference that you can hear right here at 3 o'clock. We have Zach Hill right now. He's the offensive coordinator. Andy Avalos at 2:30. We'll talk defense with him. Zach, thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, good. I've got a question for you, and this is just a personal observation. I've seen Brett Rypien a couple of times working with the softball, and last week down at Mountain West Media Day. There's just something about him to me that seems more confident, more in control, more of everything. Am I inventing something, or do you see something like that?
No. Yeah, definitely. I mean, he is in a good place right now. He's very confident. Obviously, he's got a bunch of years under his belt, and that experience with multiple games and seasons now has really put him in a good position and a good comfort level. I think he's always been the type of person where he's going to prepare for his success and our team's success. And he handles every situation and the preparation like a professional.
What could be different in the huddle if what we're seeing is just the maturation of a good quarterback, maybe into a great quarterback, but these kind of qualities, I'm not talking about arm strength, I'm not talking about read defenses, I'm talking about something inner. What can that help him with?
Definitely. He's got great confidence, and he leads by example really, really well. You know, our guys obviously look to him in that leadership role, and, you know, I mean, everything he does from not only on the field but off the field and academically and out in the community and the volunteer work he's doing, you know, has put himself in a great position going into the season. And, again, that confidence is going to lead to a lot of success down the road.
Offensive coordinator Zach Hill joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio, The Ticket. And you and Bob talking about how having years under your belt, years of experience yields confidence. How about for you, now that you have a year under your belt here at Boise State? Like, does the same thing apply for coaches?
Very much so, yes. It's nice being in a position where I know the routine, I know how the schedule is going to work, what to anticipate. You know, being in that offense and the terminology and, you know, how things are, you know, may end up being, you know, changed a little bit or, you know, modified. But, yeah, I feel very much more comfortable with the day-to-day process and how things are going, you know, which is very, very nice for myself.
Zach, when you're up there calling plays, it's never easy, and don't take me easy, but is it easier when you have a little more feel for your personnel, guys you've worked with now for a full season?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, obviously we've got our certain playmakers where we're trying to get the ball to, you know, in different ways. And knowing the guys, you know, through all the winter work, all the spring work, all now the summer PRPs and the stuff that they're doing and the things that we're doing with them, you know, through the this last whole year, I know they're hungry to get out there and get on the field and get started with things. But yeah, it's a lot easier for me as a coordinator now, knowing the guys, you know, their ins and outs, how they prepare and how they like to be coached. And now we're just trying to put it all together and get out there and have some fun doing it.
Zach Hill joining us, Boise State's offensive coordinator. So on that note, what needs to be better in the offense this year than last season?
Well, there's a few main things that we're focusing on in fall camp. One is, you know, being a downhill run game and having that physical component in everything we do. So whether it's blocking on the edges, whether it's, you know, up front, obviously it starts with the O-line, but it carries all the way through all 11 guys on the field, you know, even with the quarterback. So that's kind of where we're hanging our hat, that downhill run game and being a physical offense. We also, and that's going to be able to set up some of the explosive pass game, you know, whether it's play action. And again, that doesn't even necessarily mean, you know, we're running four verts, you know, all the time and trying to take shots over the top. That can be receivers racking slants and, you know, breaking tackles and things like that. But we want to have and carry over a explosive pass game with that. You know, we've always been in multiple personnel and shifts and motions type teams, so that's going to be another emphasis going into camp on being crisp and precise with all of that. You know, and then as far as the situational play, you're always trying to find those different situations that you can practice, you know, through fall camp to put your guys in those game-type situations, whether it be third down or red zone or goal line or two-minute offense or four-minute. You know, things like that where the situational football comes up and you're trying to find as many different opportunities to put them in, you know, adverse situations.
We probably would be better off asking this question to new line coach Bedell, but since you're speaking for the offense today, how difficult and how long does it take an offensive line to come together? Because you've got a couple starters back, you've got some other people that look promising, but there's so much teamwork that goes into that spot.
Yeah, they play as a unit. You know, we've got great leadership in that room, which makes it a whole lot easier. We've got some veteran guys that have played a lot of football, and it's nice having a majority of those guys that may not have practiced in the spring because of either surgeries or injuries, you know, that are now healthy. But they did a great job through spring, even some of the guys that didn't end up playing, you know, with the younger guys. So we built a lot of depth because of the situation, because of leadership in that room. And so we're going to be a more unified offensive line. And it'll be fun, obviously, being out there. And they're excited to get out there and gel together and compete and get physical on our defense until we can get on the field with Troy.
Offensive coordinator Zach Hill joining us on Idaho Sports Talk. And me and Bob earlier in the show, we were talking about the receivers. That's one of the things that we both want a bunch of updates on. We're looking forward to seeing how they would perform in camp. What can a receiver do to impress you?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, you know, that a receiver kind of stick themselves out a little bit in practice. Number one, definitely being a playmaker, you know, in critical situations, and that's what we need more of, you know, out of that group. Those guys that are catching balls in you know, through contact, you know, in traffic, making those tight red zone catches. So obviously the playmaker piece obviously sticks out. The toughness, again, going into that group as well, you know, they got to be willing to block. They got to be willing to, you know, get to positions and set up, you know, runs for the running backs, you know, and stretch those in because we want to be explosive. You know, those guys have got to have those down the field blocks. And then just really knowing the offense and not having any mental errors. You know, if we're going to be putting them on the field, they got to know exactly what's going on and where they need to be, what their alignment is, what their assignment is, and then being able to execute that. So, and in order to, you know, the preparation goes into all this stuff and the style of our offense, you know, they need to, there's a lot that's being put into it. So there's a lot on them to learn. And if they're able to go out there and do that, they're able to play fast and confident.
Zach Hill joining us. He's the offensive coordinator. Coming up at 2:30, we'll talk defense with Andy Avalos. Zach, is there anybody based on what they did in the spring camp that you think fans are going to say, wow, this guy has really taken great strides this year? And I mean more in the skill positions on your offensive side of the ball, because a lot of catches and a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns went out the window last year at the end of the season.
Sure. Well, I think everybody's already kind of looking at Alexander Mattison, as, you know, and they understand that he's going to be the guy at the running back position and going to be a great playmaker for us and a guy we want to get the ball to a bunch. At the wide receiver position, you know, guys, all those guys in the room are stepping up and they're ready to go. Sean Modster being one of those guys that, you know, we're looking to for some serious production and to step up his game. He's going to have a much bigger role, you know, both inside and outside. The great thing about Sean, and there's a lot of great things, but the great thing about Sean is we can put him wherever, and he understands the game, he understands our scheme and the concept that we're trying to run. So he's very versatile in what he does. You know, other guys in that room, let me think here. Obviously, Seth, we know about Seth, he's a huge playmaker. Another guy that, you know, hasn't had a huge role in the past, but will, you know, A.J. Richardson, he's really stepped up as a leader in that room. He's done a great job. You know, and then we have the tight ends, the long list of tight ends that are very productive and will continue to be.
That's a lot of names. It's a big list. A lot of guys who can contribute. Zach Hill joining us, Boise State's offensive coordinator. Of course, though, one of the fun things about camp is the freshmen who are just arriving, first chance to kind of see them extended. Is there any, what are the chances of some of the freshmen cracking the two deep?
Well, we want them going into fall camp all in the mindset like they're going to play. And we preach that. You know, we want them going in, not getting into that red shirt mindset. We want them all learning every day and preparing every day like they're going to be playing and on the field and producing for us. So we'll evaluate that through fall camp, and the guys that put themselves in the best position by learning the offense, and we trust putting them out there. And then, you know, there's the physical piece of can they handle college football and are they ready for it physically. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of different factors going into that. But again, at the end of the day, they got to prepare themselves and they got to prove themselves that they are ready to play college football.
Zach, thanks for your time. We know you have other media commitments after this, but we appreciate you jumping on with us and kind of giving us the state of the offense getting set for the first practice tomorrow.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
And that is Zach Hill. I got to believe, as you said, Chris, second year for him, I think, has to be a big difference too. He's got to be a lot more confident, knows the playbook, knows the other coaches, knows the players. I'm looking for good things for this offense. I really am.
Yeah, and it's funny because we always talk about the offense and what they were able to accomplish last year in McNichols, Wilson, Spurbeck, and how, you know, that all meshed at times last season. But, like, I still felt like there was more left on the table last year offensively than should have been. And I will continue to say, I thought the defense for a good chunk of the first half and maybe even later on was the unit that really carried Boise State last year more than the offense carried the defense. Now, we can, I guess, debate that back and forth and anticipate how it will be this year. You can never really predict it with certainty. But I do think the offense, even though you're missing a lot of guys who were contributors last year, there is a level that they can reach from the consistency basis that last year they were good. There were games that they were very, very good. I just thought it was missing something at times.
Right now, call 424-9300. Be the third caller. You'll win a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get to Beef O'Brady's at the northwest corner of Overland and Eagle to score lunch or dinner. Beef's for business lunches, sports watch parties, or friends and family. They've got an award-winning menu, huge video wall with big screen TVs. JP approves this place. Beef O'Brady's in Meridian. Good food, good sports. More of our thoughts on Boise State's offense, and then heading up to 2:30 for Andy Avalos. We'll talk defense with him. Keep it tuned right here to Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris on Sports Radio The Ticket. Sports Radio The Ticket. Trade deadline closed about 20 minutes ago, and Chris, you were right on the money on one thing. You said that it'll probably be about a half an hour before we know everything. Well, it appears Yu Darvish has gone from Texas to the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's a big-time move. Hopefully that makes Yu Darvish pitch a little bit better because he's been on my fantasy team and kind of stinking up the joint over the last few games. So hopefully he gets a turnaround here, but I guess not for you because you'd like to see the Dodgers crash and burn. So the worse he does, the better it is for you. But he's big name. Is this the fit your definition of a sexy trade that we were talking about earlier?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a guy that I think, you know, especially if Kershaw gets back, if he pitches to capabilities, Hill has pitched okay for the Dodgers. Wood has been unbeatable. I think now you kind of like, I kind of like what they have in rotation where we said we kind of like for a short series, maybe the Nationals. I think I might switch.
All right. Now my thing is this like a trade for David Price? where you think you're acquiring somebody who's on paper like it's supposed to be a good pitcher, but we really haven't seen what he can do in postseason baseball, so we don't really know what he'll do in that type of situation. He's pitched in the postseason, right? Like the Rangers absolutely have been in it a few times. I don't have his postseason numbers in front of me, but the Rangers haven't exactly advanced far in the postseason with Yu Darvish on the team. But you look at that roster for L.A., and it's going to be tough for them, for anybody to beat them in a playoff series, right? They're 74-31, playing 700 baseball, and they added, what, would you consider Darvish a top 10, 15 pitcher in the game?
He's probably in the top 15% of the pitchers, I'd say.
I wasn't really talking percent. I was talking about top 10 or 15
I don't know
pitchers
that I'd put him in the top 10.
Okay.
I wouldn't, I don't think.
Yeah. He's a strikeout guy.
Where did you take him in your fantasy draft?
It was my first pitcher taken, so within the first three rounds. And I feel like, but early on, I got a good return on that investment. And then since then, I really haven't gotten a very good return on the investment. When he's rolling, he'll give you strikeouts, and that's valuable in the postseason. You want a strikeout guy, the less you can put the ball in play and have the randomness of the fielding behind you, the better it is.
He's pitched in only two postseason games, so I don't know that I'm going to say that that is a sample size worth counting, because Texas lost both of their first rounds. One of them was in 2012, one was last year. He lost in 2012. He was the losing pitcher, gave up two runs in 6 2/3 innings, no walks, 7 strikeouts. That was against Baltimore, and then that might have been in a wild card game now that I think about it. And then against Toronto last year, he got tagged for 5 hits, 5 runs in 5 innings in the loss against Toronto.
And so if he does that with L.A., they're gonna be upset. Now, he's a free agent at the end of this year, right? That's what made him attractive for Texas to trade him, because
they could sign him back, a la Chapman.
Yeah, it's like we're going to lose him anyway or have the same chance as anybody else to re-sign him. So I don't know what they were able to get for him from prospects. I know the Dodgers system, they still have a lot of pretty highly touted prospects. So maybe they were able to, the Rangers were able to get something for him. But I will be interested to compare the rotations, because we always want to go down the pitching matchups when it's postseason. Do you still think the Nationals' rotation 1-4 is better? And if you think their rotation is better 1-4, are they still the favorite in a series?
I like Jansen better, although the Nationals have picked up a couple of arms at the back end of the bullpen. I think the Dodgers' bench is better.
I was talking rotation, though. He didn't answer the rotation question.
If they pitch the way they've pitched, I think I'd give the Dodgers the slight edge right now.
All right, so L.A., guarantee it's a lock. Bob says it, lock for a World Series. Clearly.
Well, the interesting thing, if the Dodgers can keep their top record of the National League going, they may not see the Nationals. The Cubs could beat the Nationals in the first round.
Are we worried about the Dodgers relinquishing their lead in the National League? They're 74-31. I know that the Nationals are good. They're playing 600 ball, but what a team is 74-31. That's nuts. Again, a 705 win percentage and a significant
How many wins does Washington have right now?
62.
So they're 12 games better than second in the league, not
yes,
the division.
In the league. So they have the lead. They've won 8 in a row, and this is the part of the year where they're supposed to be kind of putting their foot off the gas and then gear it back up come September for their playoff push. But now they're still really good. So they've clearly established themselves as the guy. I just think it'll be cool to see whether Darvish really does kind of turn it around, because he hasn't really been pitching well at all for Texas.
No, they're buying somebody that got clobbered in his last game. So we'll see. They're hoping that the whole body of work of what Darvish is able to do, playing with probably a better team, rekindled, you know, you move from a team that's not going to make the playoffs to a team that very likely could win the World Series, so we'll see if that helps him as well. Just visited with Zach Hill, Boise State's offensive coordinator. Andy Avalos coming up in just a few minutes. What I think for Boise State, everybody talks about receivers coming through. I think the position, if they come through and can be really tough up front, you know, they talk about an explosive downhill running game and a pass game. The line is the position that I don't think gets enough credit, blame, et cetera, when things are either going really well or really poorly. And I think last year, you look at that game at Air Force where they didn't get inside the goal line. I don't think the line, you talk about different things that maybe didn't come up to their maximum potential reach last year. I'm looking for a tougher, more physical offensive line this year.
Yeah, and is it the thing about line play, and we kind of brought this up earlier, you say it didn't maybe reach its ceiling. But it's so hard to figure out why it didn't reach its ceiling. Like, right? Like, how would you, like, you could say it didn't maximize what it could have done, but what do you think went wrong with the line? You probably wouldn't have a great answer.
I wouldn't. That's one question I would ask my broadcast partner, Pete Cavender, who knows line play, who was an offensive lineman. You know, I can see the results. We're not pushing people around at the line of scrimmage. Why are we not doing that? I wouldn't have an idea.
Yeah.
But that's for the offensive line coaches, the linemen, to figure out. But I've seen many an offensive line that's really good make an average running back look pretty darn good.
And so you're saying Jeremy McNichols made an average offensive line look even better because of what he was able to put up? It's really hard to find that balance. But, yeah, there's going to be, you know, questions there just like anywhere else. New starters, guys playing bigger roles than they had in the past on the line, and you're trying to figure that out along with a new receiver on opposite of Cedric Wilson, a new running back there. So maybe this is one of the bigger camps to track in recent memory on the offensive side because of just the level of certainty is so low.
I think that's the nature of college football. You just have the roster turnover. I mean, some years you get a lot of guys back and you kind of build for that season when it looks like, wow, we've got everybody back. Like last year, Air Force had 10 starters on defense. You'd think that their defense would be about as good as it could get at Air Force. This year, they got one starter back on defense. Now, most teams don't lose that many or don't have that many starters back from the year before last year, but we'll see what it does. But I'm looking forward to an offensive line that is a little bit physical up front. Exclusive Boise State football training camp coverage is right here on your FM home for Boise State football. You can download the Ticket app to hear interviews, opinions, and the latest camp news on Bronco football. Or you can tune in right here to myself, to Chris, to Caves, and Prater during Idaho Sports Talk from 1 until 6. When news happens with Bronco football, it's always on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. We got the scoop from Zach Hill, who is the offensive coordinator. Up next, keep it tuned. Andy Avalos coming up after this on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Bob and Chris back here. Boise State football opens tomorrow. Today, a lot of the media interviews going on, getting set for the start of the 2017 season. Had Zach Hill on at 2 o'clock in just a second. We're going to get to Andy Avalos, the defensive coordinator. He is with us right now. Andy, thank you for taking a few minutes to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, why don't we start off, Andy, on the defense? We ask Zach, every year, obviously, you want to get better, be playing at a higher level. Where are a couple of places that you want to see the defense being better this year?
Well, I think it always just starts with, you know, the fundamentals of the game as a whole, just the operation, and being able to handle everything we have to pre-snap and communicate and get on the same page. And obviously, you know, we firmly believe that the fundamentals and technique make the schemes. So, you know, if we can improve ourselves at each position, at each unit, fundamentally and technically, we feel like we'll have a better shot to improve in all areas. And obviously something that we want to work on building, which we did in the spring, much improved. Now, you know, we got to keep working on that as the turnovers gained.
Now, Leighton Vander Esch is a guy who's gotten a lot of attention in the preseason, whether it was, you know, being a part of the softball event and talking there or just getting a lot of the hype of a potential breakout guy in this conference. What have you seen from him to kind of justify the type of attention he's getting from that linebacker position?
Well, I think, you know, his offseason has been tremendous, his development. You know, not only this year in the offseason, but since he's been here, and consistently progressive, and he's made another big jump in this offseason. He had some injuries through the middle of last year and stuff, and in the beginning of the season, he was really starting to come on last year. I mean, he was emerging as one of our best linebackers early on last season before, you know, he ran into a couple of injuries. So from that standpoint, he's a guy that we've seen do it. You know, he played against two Pac-12 teams last year and did really, really well. So I think that's where some people are very excited to get him back healthy and have him get out there.
Andy Avalos joining us. He is the defensive coordinator. also the linebackers coach as well. We mentioned Vander Esch, another guy who's probably going to see more time this year is Tyson Maeva. He and Vander Esch played a lot together late in the season. How much did playing together help the two of them?
I think tremendously, and you know, that's a big deal when there's a lot of communication that needs to happen, you know, up to the front and back to the secondary, and guys just get used to playing together and relying on each other to set the fronts and handle the coverages and you know, then get into it more in terms of pre-snap cheats, backfield cheats, you know, high hat, low hat cheats before the snap, and all those guys. You know, Layton's going to be a junior, a redshirt junior. Tyson's a true sophomore, but these guys have played a fair amount of football together and do a really good job together, you know, on the field in terms of being leaders.
Andy Avalos joining us. Now, a lot of the attention for the Boise State defense, turnovers, forcing more turnovers. But I go back to 2015. That was a team, when you have Dante Dion and Darian Thompson on it, the 2015 team could force a lot of turnovers. However, there were a lot of big plays given up that season. Last year, fewer big plays given up, although the turnovers weren't high. So if you had to lean which way would you go? A defense that is aggressive and would force turnovers but gives up big plays in the process, or ones that are not forcing the turnovers but are not allowing a lot of those 20-plus plays?
Well, we're not going to settle for one or the other, right? That's not going to be acceptable. That's a loaded question there. So we need to eliminate explosive plays and improve our turnovers, and that's really what it comes down to now. When you're playing, you know, when you're not sitting in true zones all the time, you're going to tighten up coverages, and I think what a lot of defense coordinators that are starting to play more match coverages, you know, with whatever it is, middle of the field close or too high, the quarterback efficiency is supposed to go down, right, because the windows are tighter and stuff. Well, sometimes you're playing more man eye as opposed to zone eye. So we just got to take advantage of the opportunities we get when the ball comes to us, and this is really what we emphasized in the spring. We had a tremendous improvement throughout spring, and that's simply catch the ball when the ball comes to us. When we are tackling, we got to be physical at the point of attack. Obviously, when we find situations, you know, that we're always attacking the ball carriers and attacking the ball, trying to punch it out, rip it out. And, you know, the guys did a great job. They had fun with it in the spring, so hopefully we can make another jump there in terms of turnovers this fall, and it will pay off for us this season.
There are some guys that are at different positions this year. Gabe Perez looks like he's moving back a little bit from the defensive end spot to a linebacker spot. DeAndre Pierce going from corner to safety. You got a new guy, Michael Young, who transferred in, a JC transfer, playing a corner. Tell us about some of those guys either that are new or in new spots, what you're looking for from them.
So starting off with Gabe Perez. Gabe Perez, you know, had been a stud, you know, outside linebacker, DN. Gabe's more of an outside linebacker, his body type, his abilities. He can handle himself in space. So, you know, him being able to play, here's the thing about our conference, too. I mean, we're seeing more pro-style, and with the teams we're playing, we're seeing more pro-style teams. So the ability to get more length on the defense, on the boundary side and to the field side, and the way our defense is set up will give us an advantage there. And then DeAndre moving to safety gives us more depth. And really, I mean, DeAndre is smart enough. He could play a few positions. DeAndre also played nickel for us last year. So the things that DeAndre is capable of doing, he's got a very high football IQ, so his role is limitless. And then into the boundary with Mike Young, a corner that joined the team mid-year this year and got to go through spring and stuff, really did a nice job. Obviously, there's the big challenge is learning not only the ins and outs of the defense, but technically, and, you know, it's a whole different world at, you know, a Division I football school compared to junior college.
How much do you look at the personnel of some of the other teams in the conference and one of the things that you anticipate them doing and almost like anticipate some of the qualities and highlight those in camp to kind of match what you might face in the season in your conference?
Well, I mean, really for us in camp, that's what we're getting ready for this season. We're, you know, iron sharpens iron, and our offense is using us, you know, to do the same. And obviously we have to compete against each other, right? I mean, that's a big part of it. At the end of the day, we're going to be evaluated on what we do as a whole offense, defense, and special teams. So when you're putting your stuff together for camp, you know, you got to think about who you're playing. And really for us, I mean, we got three three styles we play. We're going to play spread teams. We're going to play pro style. We're going to play triple option. So we got to be ready to go in all three phases, you know, of those plans, really in those three game plans in all phases. And, you know, sometimes playing on Fridays or Thursdays limits you to practice time during the season. So you got to make sure you get your work in throughout your camps.
Andy, from a defensive coach's point of view, getting ready for teams week after week, how much more difficult is it this year with all the returning starting quarterbacks around football? You've got Troy's guys back with 17 starters, Luke Falk's back at Washington State, Tanner Mangum, even though he didn't start last year at BYU, is certainly a guy that has started before, and everybody in the Mountain Division has started in the Mountain West.
Everyone says if you got a quarterback, you got a shot. You know, a returning quarterback that you feel good about, you got a shot. So we think this is going to be, if not our toughest schedule, you know, that we've had. And we got obviously whether home games or on the road, it's tougher to go play on the road. And you know, the level of play at the quarterback position, we believe is pretty high in our conference. So, you know, we'll have our hands full, but that's what football is. You know, the challenges and overcoming the adversity, that's the fun in it.
We're joined by Andy Avalos, Boise State's defensive coordinator. And on that note, Bob was bringing up some of the experienced quarterbacks in this conference and on the schedule and also in college football this year. I mean, that's one of the big themes entering 2017 is the established quarterbacks. Why do you think that is that all of a sudden you look up and college football is suddenly quarterback heavy?
It's just one of those years. You know, it just seems, you know, and you probably get a better idea of what it really looks like, you know, at the end of the year when the combines and all that stuff comes up and you start to hear the talk about a quarterback-heavy draft or a running back-heavy draft, et cetera. I think last year was probably more of a running back, right, would you guys say, with our conference and stuff? I mean, all these teams, we got teams, you know, at one point towards the end of last year, just in itself, I mean, in our conference, we had five teams that were top 20 rush offenses, you know, in the nation. So, year to year, it's just kind of the cycles goes in and, you know, the challenges you're presented with.
How difficult is it week to week to go to a different style? Because I guess Troy is what, primarily a spread, and then you got whatever Washington State is, whatever you want to consider the air raid. And then you've got in the third week, you got Lamar Jordan that runs the option. I mean, I don't think you have three more different guys than those three, right?
Yeah, you know, and I mean, it's a, Those are the challenges that, you know, you face, and it's really comes down to preparing, and it's not something that's just going to happen in the season. I mean, we spend time throughout the year when the schedule comes out and you look at it, and you really have to with our conference, because we see so many, you know, you see three types of offenses that you got to be ready for, and it's not easy to go from spread to triple option. From week to week, it's totally – everything you're doing that week is, for the most part, in terms of schematics and stuff, it's pretty different, you know. And even from the standpoint of certain techniques that you're executing, I mean, we're not going to be working on, certain things that we're going to have to be great at that next week.
Lastly, Coach, are you hoping that any freshmen crack the top two deep?
Any incoming freshmen,
yeah.
That is?
Yeah.
New guys? You know, we always tell those guys, hey, you got to come in here, you got to be ready to play. And that's got to be your approach. Attack. Let's see how far we can get in this playbook. You know, let's see how sharp we can get with our fundamentals and our techniques. And, you know, it's really one of those things that, you would hope a couple of them could emerge. You know, where we have, you know, the linebacker position. We're looking to build depth at all positions, but especially at the linebacker position. So, you know, a couple of the young guys can emerge and get themselves in special teams roles that will eventually, you know, grow into getting in the rotation on defense. You know, you would hope for that.
Coach, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Have fun getting after it tomorrow.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
All right. That is Andy Avalos, defensive coordinator. I love talking to people in camp when camp's getting ready to open. It's, you know, start of the season. Everybody's excited. Hopefully everybody's healthy. Everybody's ready to go.
And everybody's less guarded, too. Like, they're more willing to say things because the next game isn't for
what's about
month.
A month?
So, you know, during the game week, it's like, well, I don't want to say anything that could go over to the other team and be interpreted as motivation for them. So it's like, you know, a little bit more casual now. And it really is a challenge to look at what the Mountain West, and not only that, but you add in the other Boise State opponents, you're facing so many different styles. You have to be three different defenses. Mm-hmm. You have to be excellent at being basically a different defense three times. And it's, you mentioned the first three games. Mm-hmm. To go from Troy to Washington State to New Mexico, like, you're going to need to evolve, not just evolve, but like transform.
Well, and you might do different things. If New Mexico is an option, you got a quarterback running it, and you got all these running backs coming at you, that's going to be so different than what you're going to face Washington State the week before.
Yeah, to the point where, like, I'm just going to say David Moa's name, although I'm not like analyzing his game or whatever. But somebody like David Moa could be really good at one style and then almost be useless at another style. I mean, again,
I don't think David Moa's going to be useless.
That's why I said he's good. I'm not analyzing his game, but I just want to say maybe
you want to do, I don't know, something crazy against New Mexico or something crazy against Washington State. Whatever. It's going to be different. It's like, you go to the ice cream parlor, there are all kinds of different flavor offenses out there. I think being a defensive coordinator in the pros is significantly easier than being a DC in the college ranks.
It's like this. If you had Steph Curry on your team, but then he was playing for a coach that didn't want to shoot threes, then it's like, well, what's the whole point of having
I'd fire that coach.
So, like, if you're, you know, have a really good, you know, aggressive edge rusher, but a team's doing a bunch of option stuff to take him out, then how useful is that player? So, but that guy, same guy could be very useful against that air raid team that they played the week before. So trying to add up the math here and figure out who's good against what, that's something that Andy Avalos is going to have to figure out.
And that's why you need a lot of depth.
Yeah, true.
And I think depth at the end of the season hurt Boise State. And I think, you know, as you get some injuries and you don't have as many people there, I think that's maybe the biggest reason why Sacks went down last year.
And that was the same in 2015, too, when, you know, the couple of the big guns went down towards the end of the year. That's when some big plays happened against the Boise State defense on the blue. Same with last year, the injuries late in the year, and all of a sudden, Boise State's defense wasn't as tough.
Country concert event of the summer coming up to the Ford Idaho Center Friday night. Country superstar Jake Owen, along with Neil McCoy, Cassidy Pope, who you've seen on The Voice, and Drake White. Again, that's coming up Friday night. Get your tickets at Jackson's Food Stores and ictickets.com. Coming up, 3 o'clock, Coach Brian Harsin. And what we've learned today on the show is next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
And it's time to find out what we learned today on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. Coming up with the Brian Harsin press conference at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock, which you can hear right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. We had the two coordinators on, Zach Hill and Andy Avalos. Start with Zach Hill, and Hill talked about what he hopes to improve on the offensive side of the ball coming into this season.
One is, you know, being a downhill run game and having that physical component in everything we do. So whether it's blocking on the edges, whether it's, you know, up front, obviously it starts with the O-line. So that's kind of where we're hanging our hat, that downhill run game and being a physical offense. We also, and that's going to be able to set up some of the explosive pass game. And again, that doesn't even necessarily mean, you know, we're running four verts, you know, all the time and trying to take shots over the top. That can be receivers racking slants and, you know, breaking tackles and things like that. But we want to have and carry over a explosive pass game with that. You know, we've always been in multiple personnel and shifts and motions type teams, so that's going to be another emphasis going into camp.
So those the big three, I guess, downhill run game, explosive pass game, and continue to go with the shifts and the motion. It's funny because, you know, Coach Harsin, and you clearly have the talking points, and Harsin, of course, will be on in about 10 minutes, his press conference before the start of these practices here in the preseason. But you guys heard the same thing, really, from him at Mountain West Media Days, where downhill running game, being physical, he said that same thing. He said, we want to be more efficiently explosive. He was talking about, like, you brought up the big play stats. Boise State had a lot of the 20-plus, 30-plus, however you wanted to divide what an explosive play was. Boise State had quite a bit of those, but he still felt like there were ways for them to be more efficient in the deep ball game, and you kind of agree with it. And Brett Rypien, somebody who emphasized the deep ball going into last year, saying he needed to improve upon that. He felt like he did, but there's another layer where it can go. So they clearly have a game plan, is where I'm getting at. They clearly have an idea of what this offense needs to be to get to that next level. Now it's a question of, all right, do they have the people in place to be able to put that there? I mean, Monster as the second receiver, Possibly, and we'll see if that's what we end up settling at. Alexander Mattison, can he be the bell cow of this downhill running game? You clearly have a style there. It's just a matter of, okay, where do these pieces fit into it?
I think the bigger question, which a lot of Boise State fans have, is what are they doing on goal line from the 1 yard line?
Yeah, against
deep
Air
passes
Force
are
specifically.
Great. Deep passes can get you to the one sometimes. We saw that against Air Force. They can't get in the end zone all the time. And when you have four chances to score from the one,
it's funny.
You got to put it in.
Because they were so good at that, all besides that like game at the end there. Jeremy McNichols was the master at getting in inside the five. McNichols always had the nose for the end zone, as the cliche says. Except that last game, man. It's so frustrating because what could have been if you were able to get into the end zone there?
Well, next up, we spoke to defensive coordinator Andy Avalos, asked the same thing. What are we looking to improve on the defensive side of the ball this year for Boise State?
Well, I think it always just starts with, you know, the fundamentals of the game as a whole, is just the operation and being able to handle everything we have to pre-snap and communicate and get on the same page. And obviously, you know, we firmly believe that the fundamentals and technique make the schemes. So, you know, if we could improve ourselves at each position, at each unit, fundamentally and technically, we feel like we'll have a better shot to improve in all areas. And obviously something that we want to work on building, which we did in the spring, much improved. Now, you know, we got to keep working on that as the turnovers gained.
And I was very high on the defense last year. I thought that even though the turnover numbers weren't high, I thought it was the stronger unit for the majority of the season for Boise State, and then the offense did put up good numbers, but that defense, when the offense was in droughts, always was able to kind of keep Boise State in games that maybe they could have gotten away from them. But if that turnover thing doesn't turn around, there are going to be some complaints because it was an abnormally low amount of turnovers for last season, and I just think by the pure sheer of luck that thing's going to turn around at least a little bit. But if they can keep that discipline and not allowing big plays to be against this defense while forcing some more turnovers, you're getting the best of both worlds. And again, I brought to Andy, okay, if you had to pick which one, would you rather have a defense that doesn't allow any big plays, even though the turnover force numbers are low, or would you rather have a high turnover force number with a couple of big plays sprinkled in there? And of course, he wasn't willing to answer that. He says, I want both. Which is what you want to hear from a defensive coordinator. Jeff Caves coming up on Idaho Sports Talk from 3 to 6. I know it starts with Coach Harsin, but what's next?
After Coach Harsin, there is nothing else.
Okay, that's it.
That
wrap
the,
it up.
Coach Harsin's the beginning and ending of the world, really. And sometimes in these press conferences, you'll get information about guys who aren't here. This is the press conference where they're going to be posting the roster because they know now exactly – if somebody got hurt over the summer or whatever, it usually comes out. Nobody's anticipating that right now, but we'll find out in just about 6 minutes. Mike Prater has been down at the Blamire visiting with other assistant coaches, getting a read on specific position groups that we'll go through today and look forward to the start of camp tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to hear just the tone and the mood of everything as it begins.
Hopefully exciting and looking forward to it and optimism because, hey, it's the beginning of it. Now, it's just, if for me, I'd be like, man, I'm miserable. It's hot out. I don't want to do this. These practices when it's 100 degrees, man, they're for the birds or for people who really love to play football.
Well, hopefully they're all of the above. So we'll get to Coach Harsin here in just a couple of minutes.
All right. Yep, Coach Harsin coming up 3 o'clock. And then Caves and Prater breaking it down after that. Bob's already at the press conference, so you won't hear from him. Michael Fisher, Chris Lewis signing off. Gaze and Prater coming up next, but Coach Harsin immediately next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.